Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Red Men Radio in its brand new format. We're calling this number one. We got to 100 last week. We'll, as discussed as well, we'll go back to the historic number when we get to like 200 or 250 again. But yeah, I am Paul Machin, as always, joined by Chris Pajak, and this week joined by Mr. Simon Fletcher.
Hello. We were just saying then, me and Bailey are probably under a bit of scrutiny here, aren't we?
Absolutely. Not just from the viewers either, so like
serious pressure.
And, we've got to justify adding us to the podcast. Yeah.
And the fact that we're facing you two, so much pressure.
Really? We're, it's not about yous, it's about us doing our own channel. Bailey Shaw.
Viewers remember that as well.
As well,
you can't have the new channel without me and Bailey doing this podcast.
Yeah.
So
as mentioned, yeah, and we mentioned this last week as well. Chris and I have got a brand new YouTube channel where we're going to be taking the me and him podcasty format and blowing it up. Less Liverpool, more football, more just random uncensored bollocks. We'll put the link to that and make sure you go over there and subscribe. We said last week if we got to 1,000, we released the content, and then we got 1,000 in about 2 minutes. So we've said 10,000 for the first podcast, 10,000 subscribers. So if you're watching this and you're not subscribed and you're like me and Chris and you want more, get involved on that channel. Simple as. Kick-off question, Chris, I'll come to you first. Tom Blount. How many of you fell for the Van Dijk injury rumour / April Fools? And in general, I'll blow it up to, did anyone see any April Fools that got them this year?
Actually, no. I normally do. Yeah. But no, not this year. I was on it.
I noticed you were on the Aguero one because it was the whole Aguero for a season thing, and you were like, not believing this on April Fools.
No chance. Yeah. No chance. Not this year. There is a chance most years, to be fair. Like, but I knew the date. It was a rare occasion when I actually know the date.
Yeah.
I was trying to get Ross to do one, but you've got to be subtle enough with it. Like, saying Van Dijk's injured, that was too obvious for me. I was just like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I saw a good one. You know that Jim O'Painter guy?
Yeah.
And so he takes requests from...
Jim
O'Painter. He's on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. He takes requests of, like, crazy scenes that people want, and he does them on Microsoft Paint. He said, I've finally taken the plunge and bought Photoshop. Here's me latest one. And I was just like, oh. And then the first comment, I'm not falling for that. I was like, oh, I definitely fell for it.
Like. The best one I saw was Tom Brady, you know, the American football player. He put out that he was retiring. Yeah.
On his Twitter account for that.
Wow.
Yeah. People lost their heads, like, because he's 42 by the time the next season starts, I think. So people were like, no.
And Gronk is just retired as well. So that would have killed them.
Mate, there was mass fume about that.
One of the ones I saw, I didn't fall for, but I think they've got to be quite elaborate. So you think about, was it Match or Shoot from the 80s where they had Ian Rush in an Everton shirt?
Yeah.
And it was like, perfect. You know, they went all out on that. There was McDonald's doing milkshake dips. So you could pour milkshake dip.
I saw a Yorkshire tea do one. Did you see that one? Yeah. Spreadable tea for your toast. They put it out on their official Twitter account. I was like, that doesn't sound too bad to be honest. Like, you know what I mean?
I'd try that.
I don't mind when they go a little bit of effort. Like they've gone to the trouble of producing packs and you know what I mean, and gone through made a proper advert for it and all that kind of stuff.
There was one saying Heinz and Cadbury's, I think it's Cadbury's, had got together to do cream egg mayo. And there was like a picture of a jar with like cream egg mayo on it, and I was like,
"How it still tastes like?"
Yeah,
weird.
I mean, we'll never know.
Did you see
we?
The Granada one from 30 years ago that he did with Dez? And it basically, he was there doing his like commentating about the footy and all that was coming up on Granada over the next few hours. I think it was 30 years ago they did this. And in the background, he's talking about how professional the staff are and stuff like that. And a fight breaks out behind him, but they don't mention it. And then it comes back after an advert break. And he literally goes, "I've just been informed that there was a fight behind me. I'm really sorry to the viewers." And he starts commentating over the fight. And he's like, "And Andy gets in here." And he's like, "Got him in a headlock." And then Paul gets involved and all this type of stuff. It's fucking brilliant. Like, so it's like a 3-minute video or something that got posted. Posted again on April 1st.
Fair play. Right, we'll dive into the news then very, very brief this week because there's four of us and doubtless we want to talk more about Liverpool beating Spurs in the most wonderful, wonderful way. Rhian Brewster scored 2 on his behind closed doors return to action. Anyone see this?
I saw the first goal. The first goal was absolutely lovely, wasn't it?
He had all the swagger in that. What I liked about it was he scored that first one. He was clearly made up, so he did a bit of a fist pump, and it was just one of those goals that like boss players score in crap games. And then by the time he scored the second one, he was just like, "I'm too good to be here. I'm well too good." He looked, because when you see him with the Liverpool squad, he's tiny, isn't he? He's dead skinny. He's obviously a kid in that game. And I know he was playing against a bunch of like American kid teenagers that had just popped over for the day, and they threw some boots on them and whatever. But he looked like you see John Barnes playing for the Resies, and he just looked like a man compared to them. No, I was absolutely made up with that. I was a worldie of a finish.
It was a banger of a finish. And saying he's a bit of a forgotten man, hasn't he? Because he's been sort of in the realms of injury for so long. And the one thing that I think Ox references as well, I think, did they do a Bezzy's together of an Ox? Or they did they did an interview together for LFC TV. And they and Ox says as well, it's like, "You're such a good player, and like you've been on this for so long, get a haircut." That's the one thing that I still see.
I like his hair, you know. I reckon it's
I thought spending like 9 months with Oxlade-Chamberlain, Mr. like Gucci, Prada all over Instagram, he'd come out with like this like really slick
fucking what Ox talking about. He's just copied Wenger's big coat when he went to the fucking Brit Awards the other week. It's hardly a fucking style icon, is he? He's copying a fucking 70-year-old bloke.
Well, he's obviously had a major impact on his life, hasn't he? You know what I mean? It's rubbed off on him. No comments.
I think the Brewster thing, I think it makes him look younger, and I think if he does come into the first team and start,
do you reckon that's what Naby Keita's done? He's actually like 75, but he's just trying to younger himself.
Maybe it's more like that thing we all kind of do. It you just can be asked to get the hair cut unless you've got a special. It's like tidying the house, you know what I mean? You don't do it unless you've got a special occasion, you know. It's just like, well, I'm not playing. No one really cares when I make my debut when I'm on the bench. You're right, he'll get like a proper haircut, but until then, he's just like, I'm in rehab, basically. Who's bothered? Just briefly, then, Liverpool now know that they're going to play Man City in the FA Youth Cup final as well.
Shock horror. Shock horror, really.
Travel over them, win the league, beat them in the Champions League final, beat them in the FA Youth Cup final.
Stop the kids doing as well.
Beat them in some pre-season tournaments as well.
I'm going to throw this out right now. I would take the kids losing the FA Cup Youth Final if it meant we won.
They're getting thrown under the bus. Is that big time? Like, I'm sorry, no, not having it. We want the proper double.
It's about building a winning mentality, isn't it? Though it's about a certain power over your opponents.
There's also karma, though, to get straight. You know what I mean? You've got to give them a crumb of something.
Nah.
You've got to. You've got. Listen.
Otherwise, they'll want all the revenge next season.
Exactly. I want Liverpool to win the Champions League and the Premier League. Listen, I'll take the Youth Cup as well, but to get me karma straight, I'll give him the Youth Cup.
Oh, didn't we sign that Bobby Duncan from City as well?
Yeah, and
so he'll have something to prove in that game.
I like the idea of us having this rival with Man City now for the next decade, and these lads all coming up again. Haven't had that first big win over them though, beating all City. I mean, let's be honest, none of those City players are getting anywhere near that team, anywhere near the future. But why not? Let's just beat them at every possible level. I'm down for that. We've had quite a story past with Man City. I'm right in thinking. I think we've played them in a final before, definitely the semi-final. I remember the team Micah Richards was coming up against them, and that being quite a big deal at the time. That was like in like 2006 or whatever, so who knows. Right, let's get stuck into it then. If you want more Liverpool news, you can do watch the Reds News Roundup show or listen to it as well. It's on the redmentv.com. Steve will be hosting that one and covering not just that but everything that's happening around Liverpool Football Club off the pitch. Chris, I've not spoken to you about this. Liverpool Spurs, we beat Spurs by 2-1. Is that the best way to win a football match?
Yeah, pretty much the best way you can do anything, isn't it, to be honest? I mean,
like your homework, just leaving
honestly, just leaving to last minute and getting in there and getting out and getting into the pub and stuff. But it was incredible. You know what was interesting? We were talking before the game, weren't we? And you'd obviously listen to a podcast and someone saying like a really tough 2-1 win is exactly what you want. And I'd said before the game, listen, 3 points is 3 points and that's really all that matters. But that is the best
way.
That is the absolute best way.
I said, no, come on, forget that. We don't need that. We've done that already. We need to start. We need to beat a good team really heavily and that'll help us. In hindsight, I was totally wrong.
Well, Spurs don't draw games.
No.
I think they have drawn one since. I think they drew with Arsenal.
I think it's a Premier League stat where they haven't drawn games for fucking ages.
They drew with Arsenal.
Yeah, so they had one draw this season.
Is that all they've had?
Which is still absolutely crazy to win. To have,
it's not as crazy as only losing one game.
Yeah. But yeah, it is the best way. Those last 20 minutes of that game was just horrible. I know you were saying on another show that you enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it whatsoever. I was pulling my hair out when Robertson does that block and when Sissoko puts it over the bar. I didn't even have it in me to be like, "Wait, come on." I was just like, pulling my hair out with my head in my hand.
There were so many people around us in exactly the same boat. They just couldn't handle the stress at all. Like,
it was funny because, you're right, it emboldened me a bit, like the amount of people who were just huffing and puffing and really down and all that about it. Because I was in a bizarrely good mood. But yeah, it did. I like that. I always get encouragement from that, from other people being in worse situations than me. Yeah, people say that. But Bailey, how did you handle it all? Where did you watch it?
I watched it on mine. Definitely not on a stream.
Stream.
No, actually, I remember now. I watched it on Sky Go. I had a problem for ages because I had, like, you know, we use screen records and stuff for Max and stuff. If you want to record, I had that now that you can't watch it on here because it's broken. So I refreshed it and it was fine now. So back to watching it on Sky. But no, I thought I was watching it with my girlfriend. I don't know if you've ever watched it with somebody that's not tuned into football whatsoever. So I was sort of watching it with her and she's
I banished my wife out the room.
Yeah, it was fine. And I was like, right.
Banished, she just doesn't want to be in the room with the footy's on.
Listen, it's a power thing. I banish her.
Right. But she was like, oh, asking all these questions. She's like, is a draw not all right? Isn't that not good? Like, and I was like,
a draw's not a loss.
Shut up with your logic, prick.
I was like, there's so little time in this game that I can explain to you why that is so wrong.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was saying to you the final word, I felt nervous, but I still felt like, I feel like that game was so due a momentum shift because we were being dominated by Spurs for the majority of that second half. They had like 75% possession. In a way, I was like, all right, this is going to kick us up the arse. So now we're going to put the pressure on them. Maybe we'll get in their half and actually try and score a goal as opposed to just continuously sort of dealing with their pressure. But it was, I think the previous times with Chelsea and with Everton, it's made me patient, I think is the word now. Yeah. I'm sort of like, I'm not throwing all the baby with the bathwater at the minute. I was calm with it, but then at the same time, didn't have any fingernails at the end.
The thing that got me through it was that notion of, if we're going to do this now, just wait. Imagine how good it's going to be. That was what kind of sustained me on it. I was like, this is going to be the absolute best. If we score at any point in the final 15 minutes here, this is going off.
Yeah.
Big time, and to leave it to the 90th minute for that, and for it to happen the way it did as well, because you're right, there was this, we had a couple of those chances, and I've been in that game before where you're like, you write it up as it's one of them days, like the one where Van Dijk just misses it and it hits Bobby Firmino's legs and it drops the keeper, and you're going, and you have just those little moments and you think, oh, that this could conspire against us. And weirdly, I never allowed myself to think that at the time, but there was always that thing that if it goes in, it's going to go off. And Chris, my word, like that's up there. You know, we always reference Dortmund. That, you know, it's up there with that. It's up there with City in 13-14.
Everton this season
for major shin damage on the seat of the car.
And it has to be. That's the way it's supposed to be. But like, when that goal goes in, there was hysteria. Like, I was sat just from two seats from the staircase. I was across kissing the lad on the other side of the other side. I don't know him. You know what I mean? I'm just there. We're just running. There's hugs. There's kisses. There's lads going through the middle of us down into the chairs. There's limbs absolutely everywhere. And you just sort of look around and you go, my word, is this happening really in a stadium? Sounds, because I'm game on it. Like I nearly threw myself down the stairs just to join in.
It literally.
I just felt a bit left out. You know what I mean?
It's the story of the match. Looked like, you know, at the end of Cloverfield, where like everything's going off and like they're just running. It's that first hand cam. It's just everything shuts off. And it's
I would give anything to see you do like the Luis Suarez David Moyes dive celebration.
I've done that in the crazy house on my birthday one year.
My chin first down the metal stairs. It was absolutely unreal. There's something about, and this is the best footy gets. If we win the league, that'll be a different thing. But I think that'll be loads more men crying. Well, not men, you know, men, women, children crying in their seats. You know, a big swelling of a bursting of a dam or whatever. But that moment in football when you get that goal, when you have that, it's like you think about it, because as a society, we're moving away from this. We're moving away from interacting with people you don't know in a one-on-one sense. I hugged four different people. I kissed a fella on his baldy head behind me.
I hope you were thinking of Gary Mack, by the way. Absolutely. When you were doing
that. We love your baldy head. I've never, you know, me and him chat all the time. We've had a couple of hugs down the years, but I've never taken it to that level before.
Is that because did he pick you up off the floor? Is that why you kissed him?
Pretty much, like I was down on my knees at one point, and maybe, you know, he was like, not yet, lad.
Yeah, when we win the league,
you know what I mean. Anything goes. Were you with your dad for that one?
I was with my dad. What a moment to have, and sitting next to your dad at the match is just an amazing thing. Like, I'm so lucky I get to do it, and yeah, it was just amazing, just jumping up and down in each other's arms. They're the ones you remember.
And I've been saying this. I think about our big wins from last season. They're great, and they're marvelous, because you get to watch them back, and you get a handful of great goals in there. Like, we're not going to necessarily watch that goal back for its beauty.
I will.
But in the same,
there is beautiful elements to that goal. Yeah, yeah. When Alderweireld's foot hits the grass and stops him from kicking the ball out, that is a beautiful moment that I will happily watch on repeat.
But in terms of the feeling, I think back to the games that you remember. I remember us battering Arsenal, and I remember a few of the biggest. I remember Porto away, because it was just such madness. You don't go away in the Champions League in the quarters or whatever, and do that, or around the 16. But it's those. It's the ones. It's the 4-3s. It's the 2-1s. It's the 1-0s.
And it has to be, Paul, because the thing with those games that you're talking about, the 4-0s, the 5-0s, the 4-1s, and all that, you kind of ride the crest of a wave of emotion throughout the 90 minutes. Like when we were snotting teams in 13-14 with 4 goals in 20 minutes, for example, there's almost you sort of step back and everyone's like looking around, like, can you believe this shit's happening, lads? Yeah. But you don't get that burst of raw emotion like you do out of a late winner, like against Tottenham or something. I was talking to someone after the game, in a wheelchair lady, that she was, I don't know whether you heard me say this story on one of the post-match videos. She said she looked around and the fella next to her had fallen out of his wheelchair. He was celebrating that.
I think she was laughing at it,
and the fella was just on the floor still cheering and all that. And you're like, this is the type of stuff that fucking happens when a winner goes in the 91st minute.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Imagine that, just fucking throwing yourself so hard you fall off your chair.
But Billy, it's something to do with it as well, because you win 4-0 or 5-0, it's a procession, you know what I mean? Particularly if you do it all in the first half, because you always do the thing of like, we're 5-0 up at half time, that means we're going to win 10-0, and you never do. You maybe end up like conceding a goal, or you might score one more or whatever. But there's something to it. Klopp referenced it being like one of the best, you know, the atmosphere's as good as it's been. Because the ground's full, pretty much. You've obviously got the people who've got to get off for reasons that are not because they're our asses or whatever. But by and large, Anfield is as full as it's going to be in that situation. And so you get that moment. It's, you know, that's what you get that you don't get in those other situations.
Yeah.
Right at the end of the game, that last, because you get the goal and then you get the full-time whistle.
Yeah.
Where you've got the best part of 54,000 people. Well, you know, minus the 3,000 travelling fans or whatever, going absolutely nuts.
I completely agree with the stuff. Like, you know, you can win 4-5-0. I remember the Arsenal 4-0, was it? 5-0 in 13-14. And I remember watching it at home, picturesque, with me, my brother, my stepmum, and my dad. We were literally just like, God, we're good. But then equally that season, we were losing to really small teams at the same time. Whereas this season, it just feels like the games that we have won, which we shouldn't have won, like I was saying to you on the final word, it feels like an old school title winning team. Like when Manchester United and Chelsea of old were winning when they shared, they had no right to be. Like I say, that Fergie time was made off the back of them winning games in the last minute, and then everyone's just like, oh, they're going to do it again this year, because that's the mark of a championship winning team.
The belief that sort of thing instills in you is just huge, and it shouldn't be underestimated. In between, for the whole fans, the whole team, the managers, everyone, that they've got to start thinking, yeah, there's something on our side here. And I reckon all that's bollocks, to be honest with you. I don't believe in fate or anything like that. But when things like that happen, that it's impossible to not have that thought going through your head. And it instills so much belief into you, and that's what
fan.
You need.
And that makes a big difference as a fan as well, because, you know, with 15, 20 minutes to go, the atmosphere can die off. But there's a big fuck you that goes around Anfield whenever we can see the goal nowadays. Yeah, yeah. And there's like this guttural sort of emotion and this rumbling and this just generally a scream that comes out like, ah, we're going to get you. And then like a Liverpool chant will start and everyone's just like, yeah, we can still do this. But before the goal went in, there was about a 15 minute period where I was fuming because I thought Liverpool played pretty shit, if I'm honest with you. I didn't think we played well at all, about 15 minutes in the first
half. Not as fuming as you were up by third take of your post-match video.
God, there was some guy was like doing me nothing and stuff like that. He was like panting down my ear as I was trying to do the video, and I was like,
I didn't know.
It was Paul that ruined the second take for you.
But I didn't know what Paul was doing, like, so he could come in and I'm like, right, I'd lost my head again. Yeah.
There was a very, very obviously illegitimate Payjack Child watching the film and things.
Not illegitimate, he looked older than like my, you know, marriage is.
It's like when Ned Stark goes to see Gendry and he's like, yeah, he looks like King Robert. Yeah.
But the thing is, with the game and stuff, I was actually okay with it as well. I was fuming because of the performance, but I was looking at it going, these are a good size, and if we draw this game, obviously you don't want to drop points in the first of seven league games when you come back off the international break, but I was rationalising it at the same time. I was going, these are a good side, and if we draw this game sound, if we lose the game, yeah, we're fucked at this point. I genuinely think the title challenge would have been over.
Yeah.
But what that belief, as I was saying before, when you get that last minute winner, it's just like every team that used to play against us that thinks these are going to capitulate in the last 20 minutes, now we flip that on its head, and all they're thinking is, fuck, they're going to score here, we need to be careful.
It's worth knowing that we don't know what it's like to be elite sports people. We couldn't be further from it. We might be an elite production.
Scratches.
Yeah. Procrastinators. But the thing, what we do know about sports people is they are all very, very superstitious.
Yeah.
Very, very superstitious people. And that can work, you know, in our benefits, those late wins things, exactly what you're saying. It works in our favour as fans because, you know, we know we stick around, we keep cheering, we keep doing our part. Then we'll trust that the lads will deliver if, you know, if we give them the platform for it. But from two perspectives here, the Liverpool team will have that belief, and hopefully it's not an arrogant belief that's like, don't worry, it'll all work out.
Yeah.
But it's more like we've got an aura around us of invincibility, which makes them feel, and maybe it gives them another inch more to puff the chests out or whatever. Mm. But on the flip side, again, we've said this a few times this season, just from Man City perspective, they're looking at it, and you can't help but that creeps into people's mindsets of, this might be Liverpool's year. This might be, you know what I mean? It might be destined. It might be fate. It might be. These are lads who, you know, they wear the same socks and they have to put things on in the same order. And, you know, they have to, they're all very particular about all the routines. Mm. If they find, they look at that, it's a thing. You know, it's a cliche, and cliches are cliches for a reason, because whether they always pan out or not is by the by. It's that you believe them to be a thing. And even if that only gives us a marginal, fractional pause for doubt or whatever, and says, you know, so if they're level in a game and it's coming to the end of it and they're just thinking, God, Liverpool are going to go and get a result because Liverpool would get it across the line or something, then
I'm just happy, I'm just happy we don't have to play them three times. It's like City are going to be in trouble. Like, that's one thing that told me about this game is, I think we were saying Spurs are going to be a difficult game, but we've all said in the past, especially when the draw was happening, oh, we beat Spurs, I'd be happy with a Spurs draw. It felt like the exact same as what happened last season when we went in 1-0 and I was like, they're going to come out a different team. They're going to come out and we're going to be under the cosh. And it's exactly what happened. And that gives me belief that I think they could do a job against City.
But you look at the league table now after the Arsenal game yesterday as well. You know, with Arsenal going above Tottenham Hotspur, Tottenham and Chelsea vying for fourth in the Premier League, that race for fourth now will directly affect the Premier League title.
Yeah.
And you know what? we obviously have to play Chelsea as well, but they have to play two of those sides. Yeah. And we've got to be looking at that going, that's a great result for Liverpool because we've actually put Tottenham further back into
points
the mix.
Points on the board again, isn't it? That's the thing about the Spurs one, by hook or by crook. And you, something you said, in the week leading up to, Chris, but getting those points on the board, that's all that really matters. There's going to come a point where style and goals, you know, we're entering territory where it'd be nice to have our goal difference be a bit better. We worry about that in a couple of weeks' time. Right now, just keep doing it, keep getting the wins, keep making them think twice. And the one thing that's interesting, because you referenced the game last year, got asked the question, did a little video on Ball Street with James Walcott, and he mentioned like the luck that Liverpool are having, and there seems to be this perception that Liverpool are dead lucky or whatever. Yeah.
I think that's bollocks straight away.
Really?
I think that, well, you look at some of the biggest things that have ever happened in Liverpool's history.
Yeah.
Lloris Karius gives two goals away in a Champions League final when Steven Gerrard slips over.
Yeah.
Like the icon of a generation is then thrown into the garbage for other fans to then just rip us apart with it. And Lloris Karius, one man, basically cost us a final. We had a great, obviously, Salah's injuries.
And Salah getting injured as well.
It's also a big part of that. And it's, I get the point, but then you can't then throw the word lucky in there and then also taunt us with the fact that Gerrard slipped over in a football game.
True. I think you're dead right on all of those things, but that's why I feel like this season's different, is that we actually, and we're not lucky I think we were lucky at times under Brendan Rodgers where you're scraping through by the skin of your teeth. There was no game plan, it was just raw and it was madness, wasn't it? Like, you mean, yeah. Like the fourth, I think it was a Cardiff game that season.
3-2 City game, company passes it to Coutinho in the box for the goal.
It feels like you're on the edge and things happen at 100, when you're at 100 miles an hour, things can sort of bundle your way or whatever. Yeah. This year it feels like we're getting the kind of luck that top level teams get, where you're like, Lloris doesn't just chuck it in. Apropos of nothing, we built pressure up and pressure up and pressure up, and we've got this aura of having this late thing and all that kind of. We're getting the look, as mentioned earlier, Chris, like that Man United used to get when they used to win title after title after title. We are lucky, but it's luck that we're making for ourselves, I think, as much as it is like some sort of weird ephemeral thing.
You can say you make your own luck, and that's kind of what you're talking about when you're talking about football. You are talking about constant pressure. As I said earlier on, I thought we played well for 15 minutes. That last 10 minutes of the game, Liverpool were the ones creating the chances. Liverpool were the ones putting Tottenham under pressure. Liverpool were the ones who'd got into Lloris's head earlier on in the game by putting loads of players around him on corner kicks and stuff. And he's worried, he's stressed, and you make bad decisions when you're stressed. You know, he makes a poor decision. Toby Alderweireld probably gets too close for his keeper because he's a little bit worried and they're pinned back and stuff like that. You know, if Liverpool had loads of lads on the end of the area, Alderweireld's not in his keeper's pocket. Yeah. And the ball doesn't go on to him. So it is all about how we are. And I thought the analysis on Monday Night Football, I don't normally watch Monday Night Football, but the analysis by Carragher on Salah for that goal was absolutely spot on. Did anyone see it?
No.
So basically he broke the goal down, and this is after he's done his virtual reality linesman stuff, by the way, for the Chelsea game, which was ridiculous but hilarious at the same time. So he's looking at it and he's going, look at this now. Danny Rose is coming out. All the Tottenham players are going out. Virgil van Dijk's got his arms up in the air fuming that the ball's gone out and we've missed our last chance. And there's one Liverpool player who's pegged it back on side and is facing, as Trent Alexander-Arnold kicks the ball in, there's one player running that direction, and that was Mo Salah. He was the only player switched on, the only player looking for a goal. Everybody else had given it up.
Like,
and he's the one
Origi,
who gets the head on it. And Divock Origi at Everton. It's not luck that Salah's doing that. Salah's doing that because he wants to get a fucking goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that, and I think we've got more examples. And it's no accident that these keep happening at the cop end as well. It's just
that little patch of grass that Alderweireld kicked. That's got it. There's something in that.
It's even like Lloris comes out for the second half, and the Klopp clap him as they always clap the keeper as he comes out. He doesn't clap them, and he gets a boo off the
clock.
And then he claps, and then he shit himself. You know, we had him in our pocket. From the second he walked out for that second half.
Just another example of how much the Anfield atmosphere can have an effect on this team in the last few games. We've shown it. We've shown the opposites of it as well. The Leicester game that we drew, you could see the atmosphere was nervy. Yeah. And since then, we've had Bournemouth, Watford, which were both amazing.
The Bournemouth one was massive because it showed us that we can create an atmosphere for a game that we normally don't create an atmosphere for, and it showed you the value to it. It's a bit like the ticket protest thing. Yeah. You know, when you show it, you do a little thing that goes, oh, we've actually got a bit of strength and a bit of power here. And we've had it's dipped a bit. Like Burnley, I don't think wasn't quite, and it went
to show that that was a bit more of an edgy game on the pitch than it was, because it was a 12 o'clock kickoff and the atmosphere wasn't up.
But
what I love about them games, and they're two examples of games that we've gone and basically battered teams, but after every goal we've scored, there's been like, we celebrated the goal, maybe sing the song with the player who scored, and then there's just another huge roar, like, come on, let's go again. And I think that's massive, especially talking about goal difference. That's another thing that could really help us.
I don't know whether you talked about this on the final way, but did you talk about like Hendo for their goal and stuff like that? Because you talked about how he should have been blocking that free kick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I thought that there are still things that we can learn.
Yeah,
you know, out of that game, and you can look at that and go, right, well, that shouldn't happen again. You know, Harry Kane taking that free kick quickly, very, very smart. But was it Moura that got booked for them for standing in front of the ball a few times?
Did he get booked for that? The referee ran over to him a couple of times
and stuff.
Trent, just kick it at Moura, mate. In that situation, we were all screaming, just kick it at him. We've seen Liverpool players get booked for that plenty of times in the past. Just do it, make a point of it, just kick it at him and go, ref, he's getting in the way, make the referee. But I thought we were actually, it's funny because you're right, there's a couple of moments where we maybe could have been a bit cannier, but I actually thought our shithousery was really good.
From the fans in the last minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Robbing the ball, telling Dele Alli he's got a shit sex.
Again, it's the mark of a mark of United when they were winning the titles. Yeah. Like, that was, they were bastards. Like,
I love seeing Liverpool do shithousery stuff like that, and there's been too often we've seen we lose the Champions League final because Real Madrid are smarter than us.
And I
remember watching the Real Madrid semi-final against Bayern Munich, and they were doing this, trying to waste the time against Munich, thinking, yeah, they're going to do that against us and it's going to be hard because we don't really know how to play that way. But I've seen us do it quite a lot more this season, and it gets other fans of other teams fuming. But
we said it, I remember when we lost 2-1 to United last season, I think it was you guys that said it, it's like we need to become better at the dark arts and become better at being what Jose Mourinho has basically moulded a managerial career out of.
Yeah.
And there's no lie that there's a correlation between being a bastard on the pitch and getting success. And I think that is it's a level that a sort of an unsung level that we've sort of taken on ourselves this year, and it's a reason why we are where we are.
You know who's boss at it?
Snape.
What? Brilliant.
Gotta get the Harry Potter references in sometimes. Yeah,
it's a brand new podcast. First Harry Potter reference of the new format. Harry Kane is a boss shit house.
Yeah.
He's so good at that. And that, I mean, the example of all that, like, I contend that, you know, Martin Atkinson clearly loves Harry Kane. Absolutely loves the bones of him. Like, he's desperate to let him take that quick free kick.
Mm.
When you think about the amount of times, like, the ball we got told to move the ball back and make sure it was in exactly the same. We tried to take a free kick from like 10 yards deeper, and he made us move it. I've never seen that done before ever. And yet Harry Kane's he's running with the ball when he kicks it.
He lays him off basically.
Yeah. He just fucking rolls it, takes a jog and kicks it. It's like, if you could, let's do that for penalties as well. That'd be loads more fun. But like, fair play to Harry Kane, like, for the quick thinking. We said this on the final word, because we had him in our pocket as a target man, but when he started to play as a more all round footballer, you can see what a player he is.
He's good, but Spurs are worse with him.
Okay,
you think?
But how many games have they won since he's come back from injury?
And then how many games did they win with him before?
Yeah,
listen, Son.
That sounds like specious reasoning.
I'm just doing this for Spurs fans who are watching. To be honest with you, there's no actual. There's no analysis here. I'm just going to say it's a rile.
You're taking the Twitter banter rule.
Like they've lost four games in the last five since he's come back or something. It's fucking shit. He's too much of a focus. He wants to be the big I am and all this type of stuff. He's actually a really good footballer, and I really do like him as a footballer. But nah, I think it was mad that Son didn't start for me.
But their
bench was so weak.
I thought he must have been injured. I thought he must have been injured when he wasn't starting.
Maybe he's travelled really far or something. Yeah. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. Like.
I think that's what sets Spurs. And I think that's, as a top six, I think we were all, and when United obviously had this turmoil after Fergie left, I think all of us were in the same boat for a while. And obviously then City have kicked on with the money that they've spent. We've followed suit. But I think that this top four is so tight at the minute because as a collective, they don't know how to do what we've done yet, which is know how to manage a game properly, know how to shithouse when they need to shithouse, good with the signings they make with the money. They've all got individually aspects as to why they're not. They're so far behind us as a top two.
But they should be, because they've had the same players and the same manager for years. They should be learning all these things.
I think that herein lies your problem, is that I think they've got, 4 years with Poch, 4 years with the same squad. That there's something there that you
can't... The tough thing they've got, ultimately, is that... You know, all banter aside, they can't replace Harry Kane. They do a good job, they've done a good job without him.
Yeah,
but he's still levels above everything else that they've got. You have to fundamentally change how you play when you don't have him. It's like when we have Fernando Torres. Mm. You know, you can get someone who can either do a piss poor variation on what he does, David and go, or you completely change and do something completely different to make up for it.
The actual genuine thing is it's all down to the stadium at the moment for Tottenham. I think, you know, I was talking to Flav last week and he was saying, like, it's gone 700 million over budget. It's now going to cost $1 billion instead of 300 million. You know what I mean? And actually, when you think of literally just that, for them to continue to stay in the top four, to actually go really far in the Champions League, what they've done is better than what Arsenal did, who got lauded for it 10 years ago when the Emirates came out for how well they'd managed to stay in the top four.
In a much more competitive six as well. Like,
so,
yeah, absolutely.
You know what? Tottenham are doing something right. I like their squad. I think it's good. It's young.
Yeah.
Just because they haven't signed anyone doesn't mean that they're getting worse and stuff like that, but they will kick on. They just happen to be in a really competitive area of the country for signings. You know, if you want to go to London and stuff, and they're not shopping in the top bracket like Liverpool. You know, we've managed to overtake them. We used to look at two clubs and go, oh, people, Ericsson, for example, he went to Tottenham over us because of where they were at the time. Now they're looking at it and going, why would they go there? I'd rather go to Liverpool, because they're reaching Champions League finals, they're higher up in the Premier League. They're trying to buy the same players as us, and they're not going to be able to because we're a better, bigger club.
Do you, just as a side question, who do you think realistically could challenge that gap? So we're so far away from the bottom four now, the bottom four in the top six, which is strange to say because we're so mad that we're that good. Do you think that out of Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, and who's the other team?
United.
Out of those four, who do you think comes closest to sort of getting to where us and City are?
Tottenham.
United.
I reckon Tottenham. I think they've shown for the first half of the season that they're good enough to do it. Mm. It's just about getting there, being able to do it for a longer period of time. I don't think United are good enough to do it.
They're all capable. I'd say Spurs are the least capable, of only because, and we don't know this yet, but... I think they've reached the end. They're reaching the end of this cycle that they're going to get with this team, and that's because you can only go so long without silverware before all of a sudden people start turning. They're going to have to sell someone, because if they're struggling financially, they're either going to have to double down on ridiculous wages, which they've never really done, but they might have to break the structure for it. You just can't. It's very hard to keep that, whether the manager stays. Okay.
Phil Coutinho for us, you know, we were getting close, but 5 years, no trophies, and he was like, it's time for me to move on.
All it's going to take is Real Madrid to go, we'd really like Harry Kane, and he's going to go.
We can sell Son to us if they want.
If they really want our help, we will do that for them, but you look at it and then you think Man United should, but I think the wheels are going to fall off under Solskjaer's
makeup
when they got him signed down. Arsenal,
that's getting clipped up in a year in the top of the league.
Yeah, sure, why not? Arsenal, who knows really where they're at, but they've got they should be
Emery with a full season.
They're behind Spurs in terms of constructing a squad.
Yeah.
But they're ahead of them in so much as they passed the pay the stadium off now, so they don't have to worry about the financial stuff. Apparently, even though they had no money in January, so we'll see. Chelsea are the ones, aren't they, really? Because it all depends on whether Abramovich is going to go back to reinvest in them.
Transfer bans make a difference.
Yeah, it's whether they're able to. But the thing is, they've done all their buying. You know, they've got 400 players all around the world. You can probably come in and do a job for them. We're not even privy to.
I think Chelsea are pretty much impossible to predict.
Yeah,
like they could go and win the league next season. How many times have they done it? They've won the league and then dropped off and then won it.
The reason I think it's Manchester United, and listen, I don't know what's going to happen with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and stuff, but they've got the money. That's what it comes down to. Of all those clubs, Manchester United can just drop 500 million in a window if they want to, and they might.
What we're seeing, I mean?
They've had the money for years though, and
but they haven't trusted the manager, whereas they've just put Ollie down to a 3-year contract. You'd hope that then,
but they've just had Mourinho on a 3-year contract, haven't they? And they just had Moyes on a 9-year contract.
When they first brought in the managers, they trusted the managers,
and I think
after a year, they didn't trust the managers anymore.
I don't know who the guy who does the transfers.
It's Woodward, isn't it? Depends whether he trusts Solskjaer. Is he gonna let the reins go for Solskjaer when he didn't let them go for Mourinho?
I think, and that's what all the fans are saying.
The thing is, he did let the reins go for Mourinho at first.
But at the start, the
summer just gone before this season, he knew that Mourinho was the wheels were falling off a little bit, so he didn't trust him anymore.
The point is that they're all over the place, aren't they? So you don't know. They could potentially do it. They've got everything. They've got the biggest stadium. They've got all the history. They've got everything. They've got the culture. They've got blah blah. They've got amazing players. I just wonder whether we're entering this period now where, if you want to win the Premier League in the Man City era, you've got to have a ridiculous squad. You've got to have loads of money to spend.
About six things to tick off,
and you've got to have the best of the best of the managers as well. I think you've got to have you've got to be perfect. And we're flying by the seat of our pants. We're right on the cusp of pushing beyond our limits because we can't break out into the limits that City have got. But you've got to match what we've got, and that's the thing of the Solskjaer thing. It could work out amazingly. I think we'll all agree around this table on one thing, as we all hope it doesn't.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the thing that, just the final thing on this, is like there's constant talk that the top six are so far removed now from the bottom 14 and the issue that causes. I can see now there being a top six, a middle four and a top two. I feel like all the other four teams have got so many of their own problems to sort out that us and City are so far ahead in terms of we spent 4 years getting to this point.
Arsenal might be the answer in that regard, because who knows what's happening with Spurs. Will Pochettino have his head turned or whatever? You suspect, because nothing else has presented, because United didn't come up for him.
Real Madrid
have got Zidane. Is there going to be something to tempt him? Probably not this summer, so they might still have that consistency. If they do just go, right, here's one more wedge to try and get it over the line, they could be it. But Arsenal are going to be
Spurs, I think. They played a very attacking team against us the other day. Actually, Sissoko was the holder. I know they played five at the back, but then they changed that to a four, and Sissoko's still holding. It's like, if they got in the midfield, who can boss it? Where's the Fabinho or the Gini? Like,
and they've got a weak bench.
They've got Dier, Winks. Like, if they can put a proper midfielder in that, then I think that makes them such a better team, proper, and I think they will go out and buy one as well.
But the thing is, like, Arsenal, it's turmoil and consistency. Who's able to deliver on that consistency in the quickest possible fashion? It could be anyone. Who knows? And ultimately, as long as they stay away from us, who gives a shit? Right, we're going to talk about Southampton looming on Friday in a moment. Before we do, as modelled by the wonderful Christopher Pajak, is his wonderful Virgil van Dijk calm as you like?
Can you see the back?
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You see that?
Yeah.
Bang. It's nice now,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's from Threads for Reds. Got some fantastic gear. Have a little look. And because it's a video and it doesn't work, for audio listeners, Chris sat down with the Spirit of Shankly's departing chair, Jay McKenna, for the Newsroom podcast this week. It was great. Have a listen.
Remember I agree with you about what Liverpool are doing and they're moving in the right direction. Seemingly, they're embracing a lot more of what they weren't in the past. And I use that word seemingly because sometimes it isn't quite as it seems.
Yeah.
The big thing for me was actually, I was stood next to you. It was Roma away.
Yeah.
You know, when Henderson had that banner of support for Sean Cox.
Yeah.
And it was then that it started to open my eyes to what the players
means to the fans, what the fans mean to the players, and what the club is doing. Because them standing there, I'm actually getting goosebumps talking about it now, them standing there with that banner at that time meant something to me as a supporter. And I think they've carried that on. They carried it on in Kiev with the embracing of fan culture, with the Shevchenko Park stuff.
Yeah.
And they've been much better at being a more inclusive club over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I remember next year in the grounds in the Stadio Olimpico saying, I seen the back of the banner and I knew what the banner was because we'd had it made. And I was like, I said, look at this banner.
You brought it.
Yeah, I said, have a look at this. They're going to bring it. And we'd give it to the club to take over. We'd had it made and it'd been in the dressing room and the club had, you know, that photo of the players in the, you know, in front of the away end, but it's fantastic. And that must have meant an awful lot for Sean Cox. And that happens because there's people inside the club who understand some of this, people like Tony, but yeah, others as well, to be fair, who can talk to the players. And I've actually learned, and I think Tony would probably say this, know that the players get it. The players do get this, and you know, some of the players, you know, there's things publicly where we know they've gone out of the way to organise things. You know, Virgil van Dijk done a thing with the Owen McVay Foundation to put a night on. That only come out because Owen McVay Foundation mentioned it later. Virgil van Dijk didn't. Jordan Henderson and Adam Lallana dancing at a Christmas party, they put that on themselves. Absolutely. You know,
Trent's doing loads.
And Alfred does the food bank support and stuff like that. You know, I know of lots of things that aren't in the public domain about bits I've heard and picked up and of, you know, financial contributions from players to different causes going out of the way because they believe in it themselves, not just because they're asked, not because it's popular, not because it's being talked about. So I think they get it. And I think what we've now got to a place is where, well, and that's why I mentioned Andy Robbo before as the player I'd pick for that, because I just feel like there's a connection to these players again where you feel like they get it, they understand it, they represent us and we represent them kind of thing. You know, there's probably times where, you know, we'd love to be on that pitch, and there's probably times where they'd love to be in them stands, they'd love to be in Shevchenko Park, they'd love to be a part of that. So there's a good, you know, a good relationship there, I think.
So Southampton, Friday night football. How are we feeling about this one?
Is there going to be fireworks and lights and shit?
Oh, like Wolves.
I don't know, does Southampton do that, do we know?
I think it's a Friday football spectacular thing.
They're a bit less championship than Wolves, aren't they? not too much.
Not for long. It could very well be.
In some ways, they're going to be 100% more championship soon.
And yeah, 100% less at the same time. Yeah. Like, yeah. Definitely. I've never been to St Mary's. We're going down, aren't we, Si? Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to it. It's not been a great... We've had too many broken hearts at St Mary's over the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, at least Ricky Lambert doesn't play for them anymore. That's a good start.
And club who else doesn't manage them. Season. Also, 3-0 draws, and then they beat us in the semi-final.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sick of that. Just as a point, Bailey, I mean, City are defo beating Cardiff, so the pressure's back on us. We're back in second. Let's just say it for the sake of it. We're filming this Tuesday, but we know that Cardiff are going to roll over and have the bellies tickled.
He's not even playing the subs, is he? He's a fucking blatant.
Like, you know what I mean? There's harsher words I could use to describe it, but you know, I don't want to dirty this podcast up too much. But
did you see the video of him staring the officials out?
Brilliant.
It was fantastic. Was he like, he just
stood in front of them, just stink eyeing them. Like, you know what I mean, there
was a few bad decisions in that game.
I mean, don't get me wrong, if I didn't think he was a massive knobhead, I'd have more sympathy for him. But if he was a generic football manager, I'd feel sympathy for the horrendous officiating in that game. Yeah.
But then it's the fact that he's finally thinking he can get revenge over Rafa for playing the kids again. It was at Sheffield United he played the kids against in 2008, and Warnock put in a big complaint against him. He's like, I can get Liverpool back, I'm going to play the kids. Even if it gets me relegated, I'm not bothered, I can get Liverpool back.
Absolutely, he just hates being a manager, doesn't he? I think he just prefers, he'll be hanging around, you know, presumably somewhere in Sheffield with his wife having an early breakfast, getting an early bird special at like 5 o'clock in his favourite restaurant and being tucked up in bed by 8 o'clock. He doesn't need any of this fucking stress, does he? The absolute gobshite. Anyway, yeah, so let's presume Liverpool are back in second. Southampton, we've talked about this because, you know, this little clutch of three games. And we talk about it in the clutch of three games because it's bookended by our two most difficult on paper fixtures with Spurs and Chelsea. Southampton shouldn't be taken lightly. Obviously, they've got lots to play for at the moment. they having a little bit of an uptick in form as well. They're being a bit more a bit more dangerous of late.
It's been huge, their uptick in form, like, since Ralph's come in for them, like, you know what I mean? They've done something like fucking 20-odd points since he's come in as a manager, you know? So they've really started to find a way to get them points. And I think there's a belief, like, you know, I was talking to Freddie from the Ugly Inside, and the video will be on the channel later this week, and he's like, we don't think we're going down. Like, there's a confidence about Southampton now.
Scary.
And that's mad, isn't it? Because, you know, they're still level on points with about three other teams. You know, they're only a couple of points above the relegation zone. And yet they're now being quite brutish in the fact that we're not going down.
Yeah.
You know, they've beaten Spurs the other week and stuff like that. They beat Brighton in the last game. Obviously, they're now level on points with Brighton. So they're looking at this and going, this is, you know, they want a point. That's what Freddie was saying. He says he thinks we can get a point here. But they're reinvigorated, and that's always dangerous. And the team that has something to play for is always a tough matchup, isn't it?
Yeah.
And these have absolutely got something to play
this
for.
This is not like those games where you look at them and you go, right, they're on the beach. They're on the beach. They're like on the beach. They're, yeah, they got the flip flops on, etc. Yeah, Huddersfield, I mean, perfect. I miss Huddersfield because I actually think it's a good away and the fans are good. Like, but
it's close.
Yeah, you know, it's very, very near. But yeah, Southampton. Don't get me wrong. I'm happy to get some of these South Coast teams out because be arsed. It's going to take me so long to get down there. It's ridiculous. But the fact that Cardiff didn't get the result, the fact that they got screwed out of it does actually play into our hands a little bit for this game, because it gives Southampton that little, you know, if Cardiff had taken a few more points, it would have tightened things up a little bit at the bottom. It does give Southampton a bit of breathing room, which hopefully does, it plays to our favour. Whether it affects their approach to the game, I don't know, but it is a good thing for us.
The Friday night game, I think, is hard as well. Like, that home crowd, like, we've seen at Anfield when we played Everton on the Friday night, the atmosphere was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And that was another one where we sucked the ball into the cop quite late, which is brilliant. But to have the Southampton fans who know that they've got this Friday night game, going out, have a few drinks in the pub before it, and they've got Liverpool coming, it's a big game that they need the points in, that's not going to make it easy for us.
No, but there's the flip side of that as well, Si, is they're not used to those type of games, whereas this Liverpool side are used to playing late on it, you know, in big games in the middle of the week and stuff like that. Other teams down that side of the league aren't really used to it, so we might be able to use that to our advantage. Also, the fact that we, you know, play ahead of Manchester City again, I think that's obviously good for Liverpool after, obviously, their game on Wednesday and stuff, and then you've got an extra day's rest or two before the Porto game on Tuesday. Yeah, an extra day's rest.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably a good thing for us as well. And, you know, looking at the timing of all of our fixtures from now until the end of the season, we haven't got, like, one of those 12 o'clocks, and we struggled in those 12 1 o'clockers.
Yeah.
You know, they're all 4 o'clock, 7:30s, 8 o'clocks, and that's probably, hopefully, good for us for the time that we train and stuff as well.
Yeah. I Friday night games are great. And, again, barring the fact that you've got to go almost as far away as you can possibly get for the game, you're right. The atmosphere thing will make it an occasion, doesn't it? Mm. You know, you don't want them sat in this, like, sterile, cold, quiet environment. Hopefully it'll be something. I mean, look, we've just gone to the Allianz, you know, and played by Munich off the park. That should be an encouragement. If you can go and do that, then it should help. Big questions then with regard to the team. I don't think any of us predicted the midfield three that Liverpool went with for Spurs. But we've got massive choice. And Bailey, what do you think? I mean, the big question is, the back, the fit, they're available. What did Naby Keita and Jadon Sancho have to do to get a look in this side?
To be honest, I don't think they do to the end of the season. I mean, unless it's an injury or we really want to rotate, so we really want to go for it in Porto and they get a game. But I feel like the team we played against Tottenham, that midfield is, like I said to you, it's like that's the malleable safe midfield. Mm-hmm. Like, you play, you field that first, get a feel for the game, get a deal with it, and then you put your Fabinho on, or your Lallana, or your Milner if he's not playing. But I think that they're too high stakes. I think Shaqiri's proved himself to be a good substitute, but the fact that he's now, I presume he's fit now since he's from his injury. Yeah, so it's the fact that I think unless he's coming on as an impact sub, or we're really sort of like throwing the dice, but Divock's that guy now. I think he's come on to be that impact guy when we need it, because he can play left wing. Who knew? Yeah. So he's which is really good. So
and can we just make a point on that? I meant to mention this on the final word. Less of the deep lying left wing playmaker shit, Divock. Because there was that moment where he did it and he dropped the shoulder and he ran towards our goal and he tried to spray like a ball over to the far wing and completely fucked it up. And you're like, nah, mate.
Get the ball, head towards the net.
He was good when he came on, though.
He won the fucking corner. He won the corner for us that we scored from in the end.
Yeah. He's a good player, but I think Kate is the anomaly here. I think it's been a season too soon. I think he's fine having him in.
Or too late.
Yeah. So it whatever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
So I feel like he'll come good in the end. He'll be fine. But you can't really afford to blood him in with six games.
I'm a bit gutted for Kate, to be honest, because he got a bit of a run of games in the side and he was looking good, and then he just got took out, and that was the end of that. Lallana's played two games in the midfield since then, and. Yeah. Like that was Lallana who basically done nothing for us for a couple of years.
Do we think it's trust? Okay, is it just out of trust?
I think it must be.
Hence why I don't think that we'll see much of them towards the end.
Because that's the thing, we're past the point now where we said it when you go and get your warm weather training and you go and Cop really gets to focus on the players and we'll come back and that's when we'll see more of them. We actually did see a bit of Naby around that time. But now you're just playing games now. I know we've had a little bit of a gap prior to this one, which might have been, might be a chance to get Naby once again up to speed or whatever. But I kind of tend to agree with the lads. I think we'll see rotation, Chris, but I wonder whether we're going to rotate the lads. The Klopp 100% knows what he's going to get out of.
Yeah, listen, we're going to see Fabinho, I'd hope, on Friday night. I think that's the important one for me, getting back into that midfield. And then I think you might see a Lallana or something later on in the game. I think, you know, it's probably going to be a Wijnaldum, Fabinho plus one midfield. So, but
I think it needs to be quite
that.
An attacking one, to be honest. I think it needs to be Lallana or Keita.
Yeah.
Because it's that player that drives you forward.
What we've seen over the last few weeks is when the games haven't been going our way, and I'll cite the Manchester United and maybe the Everton games and stuff, is Klopp's been very like for like. And what we saw actually against Tottenham is we saw the four forward players on the pitch for the first time in absolutely ages. Mm. And that tells you how close it is and how important it was to get the 3 points in that last game. Mm. And he brings Origi on, he takes Henderson off, and then you've got Origi, Firmino, Salah and Mane all on the pitch. Yeah. We've not seen that in the Man United or the Everton game. Yeah. He's done like for like. So what we'll see, I think what we'll see is he'll use what he has to use to begin with, and then depending on how the game's going, if you want a bit of an X factor, that's when Keita comes in. Other than that, I don't think you see him.
No, I agree on that. It's very, very interesting. What about Shaqiri? Do you reckon we might see him as a sub?
He's amazing. Another one, isn't he? We just his impact got less and less, and we just don't know where his fitness is at. But again, he's on the bench. All we know is that he's there.
He warmed up at half time, didn't he? With a couple of the others, with Keita and Lovren.
There's no need to. I mean, we've got enough players that we could put other people in, and maybe it's just that the game situation didn't require Shaqiri and that, and Origi's just getting the nod in terms of what he can do because he's just bigger and faster, more direct,
and he put the shits up the defence a little bit more than Shaqiri.
Also, I think Rose is a much better wing back than Trippier. You know what I mean? So Origi coming on that left hand side, Rose is a really good player.
And
like,
obviously, let's not forget that Divock's quite clearly our number one free kick taker as well.
The Shaqiri one's weird because he did have a few games where he didn't do well. And that's when he started, and he came on as a sub a few times and hasn't really affected the game, but I don't think he's been anywhere near as bad when he's been seen, and he hasn't put in as many bad minutes on the pitch to deserve being shut out as much as he has. I think that's why I think it's fitness.
And have we seen him, has he played a 4-3-3 yet? I mean, he was playing in the peak of the 4-2-3-1. And obviously, you'd play him, you'd take it, he was like you're saying, like for like, we either took him off one of the forwards or we put him in the 10 like against United. So, and it's whether that he can adapt to that 4-3-3, whether he's got that responsibility.
Where are you putting him in that formation? Where are you putting him in? Because you're going to put him right wing. Maybe there's still a case of, you know, if you were taking Firmino off and you're putting Salah central, do you then put him on the right?
It's a roll the dice move, isn't it? Yeah. It's one of them. If you're sticking with 4-3-3 and you're rolling the dice, you might take Henderson off and put Shaqiri on and say you be that more advanced midfielder.
Yeah.
But Klopp isn't in the business of rolling the dice very often. You know what I mean? He's not in the business of doing things on the football field that he's not seen before.
Yeah. And one point as well is that we get so much joy from set pieces. And, you know, games are such fine margins. Do you want to bring Jadon Shaqiri on in those games for a start? Because are you going to choose Shaqiri or Origi if you're going to try to get something from corners in the last 5 minutes of the game? Realistically, you just want another big lad on the pitch, don't you?
Yeah.
And defending them as well down the other end.
I think he's our best left-footed free kick taker, though.
Yeah.
So if, you get a free kick on that side, it's set up for a left footer. I think you do want Shaqiri on the pitch.
Maybe Salah will always be there, though, as well. True, you know, yeah. You're probably not bringing him on just for that.
Like. Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean. There's clearly a balance going to that. I'm just wondering whether that's a thing, because we have scored so many like goals from. I mean, you know, we don't score directly from the corner, but it comes from the corner, doesn't it? Just gives you more there. And I think he falls between two stools a little bit at times. We've got him more advanced. I think he naturally wants to sit deep and playmake, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We need him to get. Look at the Man United game is a perfect example. Get him in the box and he will score. But whether that he's just not naturally doing that enough that makes Klopp think he's an option.
I don't think he's had the opportunity to do it enough, though.
Maybe.
I think it's like the opposite of that absence makes the heart grow fonder thing. Yeah. I think he's seen as worse for not being in the team. And I think people have got an idea that he's been rubbish for ages, but I just don't think he's had the chance.
And we did it with Lallana as well, but I'm not worried about any of this because we're still winning fucking games.
Yeah.
We're winning games with the players that we've got at the moment.
It's a nice problem.
We're probably making this stuff up. Klopp might not have an issue. It just wasn't right for him. Yeah, he's probably made a game time decision where he went, I think Origi's a better player here for this type of game.
So, what's your midfield three for this game?
Fabinho, Gini, Keita. I want to see
Keita. I would like Fabinho, Gini, Lallana. I think I like that. I like the way that Lallana plays that tip of the midfield three role. And I think that against Southampton, it's again Fulham-esque, Burnley-esque style of play. I'd hope.
Okay.
I am going to change things up slightly, and I'm going 4-2-3-1.
Okay.
With a change. Gini and Fabinho is the two. Fabinho in the 10.
Might need to reskin that drum.
Origi on the left.
Salah up top.
Salah, Mane on the right.
I'd like to see Salah up top again. I mean, I think we're all to blame for this, is that when it was 43, when we were saying he's not scoring enough goals, that's where he got the majority of his 17 this season.
Yep.
And then he switched back to a 43. We've had no joy out of him. I think he was really thriving in that central role. So I'd like to see again whether he can pick that form back up.
Is there an argument that he has been poor in front of goal? He's obviously lacking a bit of confidence in front of goal. Maybe that's changed after the Tottenham thing.
They're putting him
up front and basically saying his job is to score the goals.
It's make or break of a great player in that position.
What's our Southampton side? How are Southampton going to play this? Do we think? Because in their DNA, I think they're
getting back to playing half decent football. I think they're going to look to probably counter us like every team does. They'll look to try and keep it secure for 60-70 minutes and then maybe sort of try and advance up the pitch a little bit. But apparently they've blooded in a lot of youth players over the last few weeks and stuff, and they're really getting back to that.
It's interesting though, so
they might play with a little bit less fear than maybe an experienced player.
The question is, because I think if they're going to just literally try to stop us from scoring, that's their one sum total of their ambition, then a 4-2-3-1 kind of makes sense. I wonder whether, for me, just same as Bailey, for me, if we're going 4-3-3, I think Lallana comes in for this. And I thought this when we brought him in, I think Lallana's been readied for the teams that we're meant to be better than.
Yeah.
I think they're like the
game. Ben Ayoun under Benitez was brilliant in those games.
We've got to be a flat track bully, and we've got to get a little bit more because we can afford to be a bit more gung-ho. We can afford to leave a little bit more. We can afford to leave Fabinho to do everything else. And you get Gini, you push Gini further up, and you push Lallana right up there and say, go and make it five up front and see what we can do. But that's what I'd go with. Let me know what you go with in the comments or tweet us at the Redmen TV. Quickly, a couple of questions before we round up, but safe in the knowledge that we're doing the Q&A with all four of us. We've got some absolute belter questions on that coming up, which will be on the website. Prime Gerrard or Prime Suarez in the current squad? It's gonna pull at the heartstrings, that one, a little bit. We're gonna do a little bit of chat about Buvac. We haven't done that in a while, and someone's asked us a question about it. Which, if Chris could have the hair of anyone in the squad, who would it be? And a few other things as well, which I won't read out on here, but definitely go on to the Q&A. Liverpool royalty. Who's a better defender, Van Dijk or Alan Hansen? And before you throw in the answer on this, I noticed that there was a big debate around this. I think it was Tony Barrett tweeted about
it. Yeah, I saw it.
Saying, like, you know, he felt it was mad that he had to put this out there. And I saw loads of people, because it's Twitter, jumping on him going, well, what about the Hansen's won the trophies, etc., etc. And I, following from the conversation I had on Ball Street, Chris, this is the problem we've got, is the context of this, is the trophy thing is absolutely fine. But, like, if if any of those sides that Alan Hansen won the league in had to play this Man City side, they wouldn't have won the league that season, because, you know, at the, you know, based on what it is. So if we park trophies and look at pure ability, Van Dijk is at least in the bracket, I think.
Obviously, I never saw Alan Hansen play in his prime. I've watched him play one game of football, and that was the 1984 European Cup final, and it was actually Mark Lawrenson who impressed me the most in that game. He was absolutely incredible in that game. But looking at Alan Hansen, obviously I've been told about Alan Hansen and the type of player he was. I just can't see how he could have been better than Virgil van Dijk. Have you seen Van Dijk? He's absolutely incredible. Like, you run out of things to say about him, because every single week he's putting in these performances. He's in ridiculous form. He's an incredibly talented footballer. So I'm going to say Van Dijk.
I agree. I think Alan Hansen was a very good defender in an era of a lot of very good defenders, where I think Van Dijk is setting a precedent for how to be the best modern defender. I don't think there's a debate anymore that he's at least, if he's not in your top three, or if he's not even your top one defender in the world right now, then you're on drugs. Like, I don't think that you could watch any defender in world football now and say anybody does it as consistently at the level that he does.
He is, there's a very big temptation. We're doing a little bit of this conversation, Chris, is that Twitter loves this. It's like such and such, my goalkeeper this and my centre half this and that. Van Dijk is, whether he's the best defender in the world or not, is always going to be up for debate.
It's not,
there is no debate that he is in. There are no better defenders than Van Dijk. There might be other defenders who are as good. He is as good as you can be as a centre half. But Alan Hansen was the same.
And listen, I remember a little bit, and I've seen probably a little bit more than Si of Alan Hansen stuff, and he was an unbelievable world class centre back. Van Dijk's that. If you're asking me to make a Clone Wars fucking central defender, I'm cloning Virgil Van Dijk, not Alan Hansen.
Yeah.
Because that's the guy who is the prototype centre back in the world football right now. And Alan Hansen could play in this era, but Alan Hansen didn't have to.
Yeah.
And Virgil van Dijk does play in this era. Like, watch Liverpool sides who've won the league and see how many times they pass the ball back to the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
You did not need to be a ball playing centre half. Alan Hansen was a standout ball playing centre half in an era where lads could kick the ball 5 yards to a goalkeeper to get them out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He looked good because everybody else was shit at it.
Yeah.
Virgil van Dijk looks like a fucking centre midfielder. Has got the skills. He looks like fucking Jan Mobley, who can do all the defending. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no question for me. Virgil van Dijk is a better player for this era of football.
Yeah, there's so many fellas over the age of 40 who are losing their heads big time right now. But no, as I said, for me, I don't think it is what it is. They're both as good a centre half as you could possibly be. So look at
fucking sprinting 100 metres, you know what I mean? Everyone thinks that's never going to get broken. There's no one here ever going to run faster than that 40 years ago. Shit gets better, training gets better, diets get better, goes down half a second, the record, haircuts when you thought, better. You know what I mean? Well,
no, ooh. I'm so happy that was on time.
So, ooh. You know what I mean?
To be fair,
people just get better at stuff, and right now they're better footballers than they were a few years ago.
Could Virgil van Dijk do it whilst having drunk as much beer as Alan Hansen? Not a chance. These namby-pamby modern footballers with their wheatgrass and all that kind of stuff. Nah, they couldn't have handled a session with Liverpool's back four back in the day. So yeah,
chippy on the way home and all.
Yeah, absolutely. A fat steak before you kick off.
Fucking battered burger.
There's a great story from me. There's a great story.
Battered
from
Mars bar. It would have been for Hansen, actually, coming from Scotland, wouldn't it?
From the great story from Teddy Sheringham, and how he come in when he's playing for Forest, and he came in.
Today, I think.
Wow. He came in with a stinking hangover like an hour before the game was kicking off, and he got into the changes and everyone was already out warming up, and he like went to throw his kit, and he said he was gasping for thirst, and he saw this fresh orange on the side. He was like, oh, neck that.
Okay.
And he said his mouth was on fire. It was Brian Clough's pre-match cushion fresh orange. anyway, Riley Cook
that day.
Absolutely. Riley Cook, lastly, to end us off, you're on a desert island. Do you want A, unlimited ham and cheese Sammy's
is a brilliant word. It's a superb word.
I thought it said Sarnies until I read it. Sammy's, go ahead.
Riley Cook is 4.
Wow.
A sandwich.
B, shelter. C, Mo Salah's sand writing abilities. D, a boat. Or E, just to be Virgil van Dijk.
I don't think Riley's really thought through like the five. I think he's just like
I feel he's geared up to the Van Dijk answer, if I'm honest.
A boat and a salad thing.
And some sandwiches.
Yeah. Are we stuck on the island, by the way, or are we just on one for holding?
Well, a desert island, you know. We'll follow the trope and say that we're stuck.
What type of a boat is this?
What type would you like it to be?
A cruise liner.
Go ahead then.
Yeah. I'm taking the fucking cruise liner tower with all the modern amenities.
Where's it docking though?
I don't give a shit. Well, I'm pulling up in the Albert Dock.
On the desert island.
No, I'm going to fucking ride it all the way home.
How's it docking at the island?
On the island.
I don't give a shit. I'll swim to it. Fucking swim to it. It's sound. Park 100 metres away. Pick us up there, lads. And then we're off. Okay. I take it. I've got someone to drive this boat, by the way, because I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking I might not have a cruise liner.
It's like saying it's a helicopter, but you can't fly a helicopter like you're just sitting and going, you know what I mean?
It's got to get there, so someone's got to have driven it.
A big speedboat with loads of petrol in that can get me to the nearest island with people on. Because I couldn't drive the cruise liner, but I reckon if I needed to, I could drive a
speedboat. So you're saying there's no point in just being Virgil van Dijk on a desert island?
Not even like, you don't even have Mo Salah with you, you have his ability to write in the sand.
I mean, I'm definitely not taking Mo Salah.
Thank you, Riley Cook. That's going to save
me on for that terrible, terrible, terrible suggestion. I mean, if you're stuck on there forever and ever, you're stuck on the island. Because there's a chance a boat might not do the trick for you. You know, you might need a, you know, we've all seen Castaway, right?
If I've got a cruise liner, I might just stay on there. Yeah. It's better than the fucking island. Yeah, so you know what I mean?
You're probably
eating coconuts and all that. Like, I've got a fucking oven there.
Brilliant. So I think we can all agree that we've got no idea. Fantastic.
I think having gone to Glastonbury on a sunny year, it's shelter, by the way. Fucking shelter's much needed, like when you're on a desert island, I'm sure.
A rainy year's worse.
What for? Glastonbury?
Yeah.
Okay. But I mean,
also if you've got a limited how much sandwiches.
No, but
your boat could be a shelter as well.
I think it's monsoon season.
Yeah. See, we thought that he was gearing up towards one answer.
If you've got a limit, how many cheese sandwiches? Is that like you take one and it just like magically reappears?
Or could you make shelter out of all your ham and cheese?
Also, they go so sweaty. You've ever had a sweaty sandwich? It's the worst. It's not good for anything.
You need to have them like on fucking Voyager where you can just make them straight away.
Yeah, I'm a fan of a room temperature butty, so I'll disagree. But anyway,
you could have a toasty if it's dead hot as well. Mix it up, wouldn't that?
Yeah,
you'd
live for that. Get some leaves. Put. You can use the coconuts again for that. As the weight.
Yeah, coconut butter. I'm sure you can make butter out of coconut. They make fucking everything. They make fucking oil out of nuts.
Stuff for what? What's that about?
How do they make fucking oil out of nuts?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's find out on the bonus
Q&A. Squeeze it. You know what I mean? What happens? How do they
milk almonds? Is this what you're saying?
Yeah. How the fuck do you milk an almond? You fucking little teats on it, like
its nipples. Right, brilliant. If you want more of this random chaos, you can go to theredmentv.com, sign up, get your free month, and get on the bonus Q&A. It's the 36th one of them we've done. They're all mad. This is the first one we'll have done with all four of us here, though. So yeah, get involved. Other than that, thank you very much. Make sure you go and get your threads for Reds t-shirt and subscribe to me and Chris's brand new channel, Machin Payjack. The link will be there. You can go and get involved. If we get to 10k, it's going off big time, so make sure you're part of that chaos when it does ensue. Guys, thank you very much.
Just hope
you've enjoyed it at home. Walk on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.